This is an example of speech.
All our history.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded, whistle blowhard, evergreen, topical heatwave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm Peter Albro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis. And I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at Green_Weird, which is WYRD. This episode, we have weak thoughts about more foreign entanglements with the Trump campaign and why the bipartisan Gang of Eight is important. An interview with 2nd District Representative to the Racine County Board of Supervisors, Fabi Maldonado, about Foxconn being new to elected office and cannabis reform, and more hashtag embarrassing Wisconsin updates and closing thoughts. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some weak thoughts. Alright, welcome to Tell Me What to Think. This is our 25th episode. Our silver anniversary or something like that?
I think that's going to be our paper anniversary is in another 340 episodes. Or no, I'm sorry, 52. So we have another 27.
Oh, if you go by year. Each podcast is so long, it feels like a year. No.
I thought it was only 5 minutes.
Yeah, they record much faster than. make sure to like and share on social media platforms. And what are the other things people can do?
They can cyberstalk us on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. At Bloated Nemesis and at Green_Weird, WYRD.
On iTunes and Google Play.
Yep.
I don't know if Stitcher has subscriptions.
Oh, yeah. You can subscribe on Stitcher. I think our podcast is the only thing I subscribe to on Stitcher, to be honest. All right.
Yeah, we should get a SoundCloud.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we should do that. Maybe after 50 episodes. All right, so you wanted to talk about, what was it, Qatar? Qatar?
Yeah, the two people, who was it, Brody and Nader?
George Nader, who is a pedophile, international man of mystery, who is...
helped arrange the Seychelles meeting with Eric Prince.
Yeah, apparently amongst other meetings, and he is supposedly a cooperating witness in the Mueller investigation. And yeah, what about and then Brody? To bring people up, was on the finance committee for the Republican National Committee.
Yeah, vice chairman of it.
Yep, and he served a year in prison for some sort of New York. Was he the one involved in the New York pension scandal or something like that?
That wouldn't surprise me.
He has some sort of history of bribery and getting caught. And he is also noteworthy for being, apparently, a client of Michael Cohen, which was revealed along with Trump and Hannity being clients. And supposedly he... had a like $1.something million payment to a Playboy playmate that he impregnated, but there is a very believable theory, not even like It's very believable. Written up in, I think, New York Magazine. Don't have the author's name in front of me. I think he's already on a second article about how that was probably Trump who did that, and this guy took the bullet for it.
Jumped on the sword, fell on the
and
sword.
That's probably going to tie into what you're going to say.
Well, I mean,
as maybe. Motivation.
Sure. So Brody and Nader got caught trying to sell their access to Trump per an AP report, but they were soliciting money, which I think is interesting, from Qatar and Saudi Arabia.
Now, that seems conflicting.
Why?
Aren't Qatar and Saudi Arabia...
Well, now they are. After, remember the embargo started after, halfway through his first year?
Gotcha.
Before they were all relatively nice.
Gotcha.
But the thing that strikes me about this is that they were trying to seek money from the same people that were donating to the Clinton Foundation. And so, Trump was not necessarily discriminate about who he was taking money for. And so it was super easy for them to pin, a Russia accusation on him. And hopefully, maybe, it wouldn't necessarily get to, the ties with Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the other people who have given both sides so much money.
Hmm.
I don't know. I just thought that was funny. Or not funny, haha, but funny indictment.
Yeah.
It just seems like a attention deflection, you know?
Could you explain that?
Well, I mean, prosecutors will try to make the easiest, strongest case that they make. And so oftentimes, the first charge that is put in front of them is the one they pursue with dogged determination.
Sure. Okay.
So if you're investigating Russian sources of corruption and collusion and whatever else you want to call it, then they will investigate that and not necessarily get to the other people who are probably doing the same thing.
Do you think that's...
I mean, Saudi Arabia is one of, if not the biggest contributor to lobbying in Washington. Mm. They're throwing a lot of influence around and getting on their bad side for any politician might not necessarily be good. So, it's an easy thing to just be like, oh, yeah, it's Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia.
But if they're talking to Nader now, I mean, might that actually still be on the table then?
It might be, but Nader, again, was involved in that Seychelles meeting where Eric Prince was trying to set up a separate channel of communication between Trump and the Kremlin.
Yeah.
And that's obviously more serious than the millions upon millions of dollars which are pouring into the country from Gulf oil states.
Well, I think it was reported this past Saturday by maybe the New York Times. Don Jr., our beloved first idiot son. I don't know what I'm trying to say. He's a moron.
I'm just saying he's stupid.
No
punchline. He's
stupid. Yeah, he had a meeting with Saudis and United Arab Emirates
in Trump the Trump Tower.
With Nader set up, I believe.
Right. It's, I know the fucking meeting was probably known about before, but you just talk about Natalia Veselnitskaya.
What do you mean, probably known before? By who?
Well, the Senate and the Senate committee that's also investigating it, because it came out as part of the release of their testimony, right? Or testimony to the committee?
I don't remember how it came out.
Yeah, because they just dropped 2,500 pages of testimony last weekend.
I mean, I know Don Jr. lied about it, too.
Well, I mean, is his mouth open? Is he awake?
Yeah, I think he was specifically asked... the question was I think Empty Wheel might have tweeted this out yesterday. It was all right, so we've been talking a lot about Russia, but, in general, foreigners shouldn't be influencing campaigns. Are there any other meetings you'd like to tell us about? And he's like, no, I don't recall any other ones.
Yeah, so there's a lie. I mean... the person who probably asked that question already knew about it, and that's why you would ask it, right? If you already have if you already know the specific answer, you give them the chance, you give them the rope to hang themselves with and commit perjury.
It did seem like, I'd have to check back as to who asked it, but, you know, could also even just be kind of someone a little more friendly to him, like, you know, giving him the opportunity to just, you know.
That's worse.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, oh, while we have you here, is there anything else you want to talk about? No? Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite in that tone.
Well, could be.
I thought that was strange that it's only coming to light now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Saudi contributors aren't necessarily even as quiet as a KGB GRU fucking penetration operation would be.
Sure. I also wanted to talk about people from the DOJ went to the White House, if I'm understanding this right, within the past couple days, and gave some sort of briefing on what, like,
their informants that they used to penetrate the intelligence operations surrounding the Trump campaign.
Yeah, and
I was having an argument on Twitter just this morning about this with a guy. Well, not an argument necessarily, but he was like, why would they need informants? It's like, dude, he is surrounded by criminals and maybe actual real spies. They're not going to say shit over the phone. I mean, maybe Trump will, but the people who they need to listen to aren't going to be talking on the phone.
What do you mean, why do they need informants? Like,
it's,
was
know,
it
it's
a makeup person, or is it just...
I think he was a Brazilian. Maybe he's a Brazilian maggot?
That's just like, even if you don't think there was a crime, you like, it shouldn't take a huge leap of logic to even think why they might, like, there's at least smoke.
Yeah, well, I mean, his point was like, wouldn't they use other means of surveillance? And it's like, okay, you're obviously a foreigner and have never seen The Wire to understand why you need to try this way before you wiretap their phones.
Yeah, but
you have to demonstrate exhaustion. Thank you, David Simon.
But they also were doing that, at least later on.
I mean, they had to have. I can't imagine that they... nobody was going to talk. I don't know what Michael Wolff did, but he must have cast a magic spell or gotten a charm from a witch to get so much information. Well, I guess maybe the White House was different than the campaign.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's... Well, first of all, he didn't have a ton in the book that was, like, criminal. It was more, like, gossipy, salacious-y stuff, or just, like, ineptitude. But I have a feeling there's an element of, we're the White House, we're, you know, we're on top of the world, we make the rules.
That's funny on its face, right?
Yeah, which they're finding out isn't entirely true. Although, I was thinking... this morning, how, like, part of me says, man, if we just had, like, one fix, which would be, like, the president is actually not above the law, because, you know, they kind of are, and, you know, like, made it really clear that, for example, they can be indicted, crimes.
I don't understand why it needs to be that clear. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you can't... I mean, it gives special procedures for an indictment and impeachment, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it should be so inapproachable as it is now. I have a feeling it's, at least in some respects, part of that peaceful transition of power, and you don't want to put cuffs on the guy who can command an army of millions, huh?
Yeah, yeah, maybe in the long run, it leads to more peace by not, like, even if you do have criminals in the White House, by not, by making them think that they won't be in prison. Because people who think they might be in prison might lash out.
Get desperate.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. By the same token, though, if they could go to prison, then so long as... you know, every other aspect of government isn't, like, in their pocket, then like, you just don't let them lash out. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, but it's complicated. I mean, I think I can see both sides, and so I don't think it is a simple fix. But I, you know, I definitely had that thought this morning, like, well, why don't they just do this? And I'm like, there's...
Because he can turn to the Marine next to you and be like, put one in his forehead right now. Sir, yes, sir!
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a tough one, because, like, theoretically, they're supposed to follow every order, but if...
That's an unlawful order.
That's, well, okay.
Then you're depending on people who know whether or not that's a lawful order and whether or not they should follow it.
But if they have a cult of personality going on... You know,
and it doesn't matter. Yep,
yeah, it's tough. So anyway, there is this meeting, and it's gotten some press because it was not a bipartisan meeting. It was not the so-called Gang of Eight, which are the heads of the parties in both houses of the U.S. Congress, and then the heads of the intelligence committees from both parties. I believe that's the Gang of Eight.
Yeah,
and they. So was everyone from the...
To my understanding, it was just the Senate majority and House majority leaders and the Republican members of the Gang of Eight.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's supposed to be... The Gang of Eight is kind of an informal consultation-like
mm-hmm.
committee to mm-hmm. kind of handle that interfaces, the interfaces, like this be potentially problematic ones, between the executive and the legislative branches of our government. And... If they were going to do partisan meetings like that, I've hesitated to use this phrase before because people are getting really hyperbolic about it, but this is kind of a direct threat to what we know of as American democracy.
Yeah, and so let's delve into this one for a minute because this is not the Gang of Eight is not a codified institution. It's not in the Constitution, but it's something that has arisen that is a kind of tool for an effective.
It's a little anti-democratic because they're only consulting with like eight people as opposed to like the 500 and some that populate Congress. Well, but
it's supposed to be for intelligence, you know, high level classified intelligence. Which, I mean,
I agree with that, but at least I understand it.
Yeah, I mean, it. This would be a less debatable issue, I think, if there was a better classification system.
Yeah, I mean, Cheney, like, put the classifications all the way up, and, yeah, so basically things that the government would have released before are now buried under secret and above classification levels.
Yeah, and you can, but, I mean, I think... You know, it we can both picture information that we don't want every single member of Congress knowing.
Yeah, but that would be like, you know, those crown jewels of sources and methods.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You can release information. I mean, mm-hmm. just if you just release the fact that you know, not even know how you got it. I mean, maybe that's prejudicial because of what the fact is, but
yeah.
If people need to know, then... People need to fucking know. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, you can't be fucking slaved to your to an obscure classification system, well, an opaque classification system. It's not really obscure, it's prevalent.
I think the biggest mistake the highest levels of intelligence, FBI, CIA, so on, have made over the second half of the 20th century going into, you know, this part of the 21st century, is this seemingly, they act like, in like no way do they trust the American people. And, you know, surprise, surprise, that mistrust, that distrust is coming back at them. And even, I mean, there's a good argument to be made that the American people distrusting them is warranted, but even if it wasn't warranted... We don't know. We don't know the facts. And so it's so hard to make an informed opinion to trust them.
Right? The only reasonable course of action is to question or to raise questions.
And they just... I know, like, the CIA has made these, like, vain efforts at, like, PR. But it doesn't, like... It doesn't... it hasn't extended to actually just being more forthright and honest. And I think it's just, it's hurting them. It's hurting them. It's hurting the only reason, like, this, you know, these Trumpian conspiracy theories can take root is because of that distrust. And that's just the people on the right who have actually been mostly trusting the law enforcement for the past 50 years. Just wait until things start turning a little bit. I mean, it's going to be, you know, once there's not like a scapegoat bad guy like Trump in the picture, and it's the left who is, I mean, it's going to be bad at some point unless things get fixed. But anyway, so this was not a bipartisan meeting, which means that the Democrats were not brought into the loop. So that, why, not that we care that much about maybe Warner or Schumer or Pelosi, but why do we really want to make sure they were in that meeting?
Because this is like just a targeted disclosure of information. This is like, if it were bipartisan, they wouldn't be able to say that it was done for expressly political purposes. Because everybody knows there's no political advantage, or there's no potential political advantage, but that is the only reason to do it this way.
Yes. And like, why would anyone who's not already a big Trump supporter, like, believe what they say? If they aren't bringing in their opposition.
Exactly, that's an interesting point I hadn't thought of, yeah.
Like, why? They're not even trying to get, like, you and I to believe.
No, they don't care. They're aiming at...
That 40%, man, just keep them.
Yeah, well, 23%, right? Isn't that what Bush had, what his final approval rating was about?
Well, no, I'm saying that... Did you see, what's his name, Charles Franklin, was posting on Twitter yesterday about how Trump has actually, at least since these records have been kept, the most stable approval rating. And disapproval rating, I guess, too, I believe.
I remember reading that now. Like, the hardened, like, approval and disapproval. Like, the people who have decided are not going to change their minds.
It's, like, between, just off the top of my head, but it's, like, 38% and 43% or something. It just bit by bit, month it goes up a point, goes up a point, goes down a point. There's no wild swings. There's no like overall trajectory way up or way down.
God, you remember Bush's approval rating on 9/11?
Oh, he was like, wasn't it like 85-90% or something?
Yeah, it went overnight from like 40 some to like 80 some. Oh man.
And I mean, because even like I think last week on Bill Maher, he was like some like incredulous. It's like, it's going up, his approval rating. It's, can you believe this? It's like, yeah, but it's not going to go up. 70% of the country's, 50% of the country is not going to like love Trump. 50% didn't love him when he won the election.
Right? Was he the first president to win with a higher disapproval rating? He had to have been, right?
Well, whoever won that election would have been, I believe.
I suppose. There's no love on either side.
But, I think it's weird though, because technically I think his approval was lower and his disapproval was higher than Hillary's, but just because of the way the electoral map works out, I mean, which isn't surprising because he got fewer votes, but the way the electoral college system works out, he had it all in the right place.
It's like he had some kind of giant map and a huge data analytics team working for him to try to figure out which voters exactly to target.
It's almost as if he had corrupt regimes and companies and billionaires around the world.
Right, that were not exactly conspiring, but working together to make sure that he was successful.
Any other news you wanted to get quick in weak thoughts here?
Let me see, check my notes. The Brewers, actually, I think we should mention this, because they're actually doing pretty well this year, and they won against the Diamondbacks last night, right?
Yep, 1-0. Manny Pena, their catcher, I think threw out 2 base dealers, because he has a cannon for an arm. They, I believe, have... I don't think they've lost since I heard this fact, so I believe they still have the best record in the National League. If not, it's like a half game back or something. They're leading their division. They still have, right now Ryan Braun is injured. Their starting first baseman is out. Their best starting pitcher from last year has been out all season. Their second best starting pitcher from last year has been out the past few weeks. But they have tons of depth. They got young people. They got, role players. They actually, in some positions, had too many players at the beginning of the year anyway, so it's kind of worked out. Not that injuries are ever good, but, they can handle them. So, yeah, they're rocking and rolling, man.
That's amazing. Should try to get a game in this year.
For sure, for sure. I think should be good just because of those injuries. They should pretty much stay good all year long. I don't know if they'll necessarily be like the World Series favorite when it all comes, down to the end of the season, but they are competitive and they will stay competitive. And, it's actually not a bad time in Wisconsin sports. I mean, the Packers had a bad year last year, but, Bucks are good, Brewers are good, Packers will be fine.
Right, they're already exercising and they seem to be of good spirits.
Yeah, so, anyone who's, dissatisfied with their professional sports team allegiance, Wisconsin. Well, you don't have to move here. I mean, there's a Packer bar in your area during baseball season. I bet you can get a Brewer game on. They're out there everywhere. Shit, around the world. If you're listening from Europe, I bet there's a Packer bar nearby. Just turn off that other form of football.
No, or the Fox News, as they may have.
Do they watch Fox News around in Europe? Is there Fox News Europe?
Probably not. I mean, maybe.
Well, they have Sky, right?
Yeah, they have Sky News, which is not exactly the same.
Yeah, well, good for them. All right. Well, we have would you have something else?
Oh, also, I think based on, this is just going to be a quick note, but based on developments in Syria, it looks like Russia is basically withdrawing their support from the regime.
Hmm.
So look for that to develop in the next week or so.
To make way for...
they got what they wanted out of it, so... And I'm sure the Israelis gave them, or Netanyahu specifically gave Putin some reassurance that if things go really the other way, that the Russians could maintain a presence at certainly their Mediterranean seaport.
So you think this was Netanyahu's, they just met recently, right, in Moscow?
Right, for Russia's Victory Day parade.
Jesus.
That was Russia's celebration of World War II. Their victory in World War II, and Putin had Netanyahu as his, guest of honor. I mean, if that doesn't send a signal to Assad and everybody else in the Middle East, I don't know what does.
So, Israel has not been... I mean, it seems like, from my perspective, that Israel mostly has had just an issue with Iran's involvement in Syria, but do they have problems with Assad as well?
No. I think what it is that Assad was one of those people on Bolton's axis of evil. And so if he wants to help, buttress his American support for action against Iran, he can be like, oh, we're going to hit Syria too. And Bolton will, his mustache will just start quivering nonstop. War. Somebody smell blood? But part of this is, I think Bolton just kind of needs there to be a war for his point of view to be useful to anybody.
Yeah, that's so fucked up.
Isn't it, though?
Just like such a sorry, sad state of existence that you think your only use in life
is that.
I mean,
and you're not even, like, a general. Like, I get it if you're, like, fucking George S. Patton and you think you're the reincarnated, like, Roman generals and stuff, but...
I mean, maybe, sure. With his successes, it's hard to argue, but Bolton hasn't been nearly so successful.
Yeah, I mean, he's
he
not...
He did time in the National Guard, so he didn't have to go in Vietnam.
He's a goddamn diplomat, right? I mean, that's his training.
Sort of. I mean, he's worked in the State Department, but I wouldn't exactly say he's a diplomat.
Well, he's an... Well, he was an undiplomatic diplomat.
I believe the word the North Koreans would use would be repugnant.
All right. Okay. Let me introduce our guest. He's not here right now. We're just recording Weak Thoughts. We already talked to him. And he is Fabi Maldonado. You'll be hearing that in the next segment. He is the 2nd District Representative from the Racine County Board of Supervisors. He also is active in our Wisconsin Revolution out of Racine. He's kind of a leader of progressive politics in Racine City and Racine County.
An up-and-coming progressive. His name is going to get... Pretty yeah. widely known,
and I'll just give my like quick little. I found it pretty inspiring that he's new to elected office, and I just thought that was really cool. To hear that's like he just never thought he would be there doing that, and now he is. So
right, I mean, I'd never heard the Second City thing before.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, well, you'll hear about it.
Yeah, you'll hear.
Okay,
in the next segment.
Okay. Arthur Avenue is where my first house that I lived in was.
Nice.
Anyway, so you want to introduce yourself to our listeners, you know, in your own words?
Sure. I'm Fabi Maldonado. I am the county supervisor of the 2nd District of Racine County. I'm also on the OWR board, and I represent CD1. I also work with Wisconsin Working Families Parties. So pretty busy guy.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, especially if you're talking campaigning right now, 9 o'clock at night. So let's just quick, because like I don't know much about like what is a board, what is a county board supervisor. Do what are their responsibilities? What are they?
So essentially, county board, we're the political action arm of the state in Racine County. Mm-hmm. So we have to allocate the monies to go through two different services in Racine County. We mostly deal with parks, highways, zoning, prison funding, the zoo. Municipal buildings related to the county. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we do.
Oh, okay.
We're dealing with the whole Foxconn project, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about that here. But
yeah,
we deal with a lot of stuff.
Okay, I'm sure we're going to get to that.
What was the second position you said again?
I'm also on the OWR board.
What is that?
Our Wisconsin Revolution.
Oh,
our Wisconsin Revolution. Yep, and I represent CD1. Yeah. The convention is coming up soon in June. I can't remember what week, sorry. But we're going to be picking new CD1 leaders. Not CD1, but like just they're going to be voting for new CD leaders. I will probably be stepping down because honestly, I'm just doing too much. But yeah.
Yeah.
My job also on the board there is to essentially help out chapters, maintain relationships with multiple groups, talk to the board about what we could be doing better, just planning events for our Wisconsin Revolution. So yeah, it's a lot of stuff.
So your association with our Wisconsin Revolution and Wisconsin Families, is that how this Wisconsin Choice campaign? Like how you became right. involved in that.
So I can't really speak too much on the campaign, but definitely it's the Working Families Party is a political action group out of New York. And they just started a chapter in Wisconsin about 2 years ago, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And I'm working with both of, I'm working on the campaign, which is funded by OWR, and Working Families Party. And yeah, so I can't really talk too much about the campaign, but I can say that I do work for the Wisconsin's Choice family. Wisconsin's Choice campaign.
Sure.
Which deals with gubernatorial candidates.
Yeah, I saw online that they are going to be having a thing in Racine soon.
Right.
For the gubernatorial candidates.
That's on May 30th, if memory serves.
Mm-hmm. Right, May 30th at the Bryan Center, 6 p.m. to 8:30. Everybody, including both of y'all, are welcome to come.
I'm going to try to be there.
Yeah, come through, listen to what the gubernatorial candidates have to say about, you know, the state. And the forum is going to be themed Racine, you know, surprise, spoiler alert. It's going to be state issues. So we're going to be talking about, like, corporations getting big tax breaks. Obviously, we're going to be talking about Foxconn. And then we're going to talk about Racine being the fourth worst city in America for African Americans. Talk about water rights. Different issues that pretty much all the counties in Wisconsin have to face with in a different way, but very similar.
Sure. It sounds like, yeah, a very complicated slice of the pie. You guys don't have any state parks, though, in Racine County, do you?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Just thinking, I know management of some of the parks is up north, especially with the snowmobiling, is going to be a big thing.
At least none of that I know of just yet. I am the Parks and Recs liaison, so for the city and the county. So I'm not. I just started, so my first meeting, my committee is coming up this week for the Parks and Recs. So I will have a list of all parks.
This sounds like an ambush question. I didn't even know, Fabi.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, I don't think anybody's gonna write me an email because I didn't know my parks.
Yeah, I think Bowling Recreational Area is in Kenosha County anyway.
Yeah, I don't think we do have a state park in Racine County, honestly.
Hmm.
Now, Racine does not have, it's not vibrant with state park type areas.
No, it's got that one great lakeside park. That's got like at least 6 or 7 miles of trails and like camping, and that's probably great on the weekends. The name of it escapes me. Cliffside?
What's it called? Are you talking about Browns Lake?
Cliffside?
Oh. Gotcha.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta catch up. I gotta visit all the parks because I am the Parks and Recs dude. So
mm-hmm.
Definitely have to make my rounds around the county and just visit all the parks. But yeah. We just recently voted in the county board to redo the cement. The parking lot at the quarry in Racine. So the quarry, you know, it's been there for a long time. Really crazy story where they were digging the quarry and people were working on break. And then all of a sudden it just started flooding. They hit like a line or something and it just started flooding and all the machines are still down there.
Wow.
Yep. It's really popular with scuba divers.
I'm sure you remember that story, Peter.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know. Is that true? I've never actually scuba dived down there to.
Yeah, I grew up just down, whatever highway that is, like just outside of city limits. So like we were really close there. We went swimming there all the time.
That seems dangerous.
No. It just has like a little beach area. That's. Like, you know, cordoned off, and it's totally fine. The thing is, it would get really packed because it's like not a huge beach. Whereas, like, you'd go down to like North Beach or one of the Lake Michigan beaches to like, you know, stretch out a little bit more. The problem was is that when I was a kid, there would be like billions of dead fish everywhere.
Right, I remember that.
And the beaches were like. I think they probably are still closed a fair amount. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but they were closed like a lot. Like I remember we'd have summers off And, like, we would check, like, in the morning each day to see if the beach was open and be like, nope, it's closed for E. coli.
Yeah, that was a big thing a couple years ago when I remember going there last.
They're beautiful beaches. Like, the beach itself, though, is, like, they're so big and sandy. It's awesome.
To talk about beaches, Racine, the city of Racine, North Beach, is, like, ranked top 50.
Yeah, we got
cut out there for a second. Top what?
North Beach is ranked in the top 50 most beautiful beaches in America. Oh,
yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. It's nice swimming. Yeah, it's good. So when did you? So you were elected to the board recently.
So today was my third county board meeting. I was elected in April 3rd.
Congratulations. What is this your first elected?
Yeah, this is my first elected position. I did ran for mayor last year unsuccessfully. But yeah, then I ran for county board.
Sure.
And I got luckier.
Yeah. what pushed you into wanting to run for office?
Right. Like a big decision. So honestly, I tell this to everybody, like, I had no idea in a million years that I would be running for office. if you were to tell me back in 2016 that I would be running for mayor, I would have laughed. I was just – when I was – in 2016, I was in Chicago. I was working for – I was touring with Second City. I used to do comedy. And, yep, I used to do stand-up. Really? I used to do improv. I used to do a little bit of writing. I wasn't the greatest at writing. But yeah, I did that for like 5 years. I got my political science degree from UW-Milwaukee, but I didn't really want – it was like a last-minute decision that I did. Like, oh, screw it, I'll just be a political science major and then whatever. But it was nothing like never in a million years did I ever thought I'd be working in like politics. So yeah, it just happened. It just like I was working at a for-profit school in Chicago. Didn't like it. I felt really shitty about it. And after that, I was on Facebook. And it was during the whole Standing Rock situation. You guys remember the whole Standing Rock?
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Watching the videos unfold, and I was just like, you know what? Like, I'm gonna go. And I pretty much quit my job that day, packed my bags, and I went to North Dakota. And I came back to, after Standing Rock, I came back to Racine. I was looking for something to do. And I was gonna join OWR, but I ended up not, it wasn't for me at that moment in time. So I came back and I just started the Racine Green Party. And then a few months later, we got Jill Stein to come through, and she endorsed my mayoral campaign. And yep, and then that was it. Ran for mayor. We ran our decriminalization petitions to decriminalize cannabis in the city of Racine to dollar fines. And I mean, we didn't succeed, but we made a point, and people were really excited about it. And yeah, and then I ran for county board. It's just like once you get bitten by the political bug, it's just like you can never, like, I guess, turn back. Yeah.
That's really inspiring, because despite, you know, as you said, you have a political science degree.
Never in a million years. Actually, I went in Chicago. I got desperate, and there was an intern position for an alderman. There was an alderman for where I lived that he needed somebody to be a secretary, just like take emails, blah, blah, blah. And even then I was like, wow, like this is crazy. Like I could never imagine being part of a campaign like that. So I encourage everybody who listens, who's listening right now, and to both of y'all, like run for office. Like people don't realize how much power we really have until you actually run for office.
That's remarkable.
Should we just get into the meat of it? The looming question over all of southern Wisconsin, Foxconn.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's say hello, hello to the elephant in the room.
So, Fabi, I assume you are against it? Is the Foxconn plant in your district?
Right. I was very, very against Foxconn. I was the only mayoral candidate to who I would say I would vote against it and would do whatever I can to stop it from coming to Racine. And obviously, I didn't win. And during the time, actually, it was like a 50-50 thing. Like, half the people were for it, and the other half were, like, against it. But, yeah, at first, Foxconn was really popular. And right now, I would still say it's fairly popular, but it's more speculative. Like, more people are more, like, weary about it. They're more, like, hopeful now, I guess, than for it.
When you say, when you're talking about kind of the breakdown of people and their views on it, do you mean the county at large, the city at large, or your district?
The city at large was like split between, like, people were torn. And still, it's a very, it's still a very touchy issue in Racine, city of Racine. But yeah, more people are definitely, like, a little bit more, second guessing it now. Like, is this really the good deal? And it's because, like, you know, whatever happens with Foxconn will be magnified, right? So if something good happens, we're going to get a lot of good things going, you know, for everybody. But if something bad happens, it's going to be magnified to, like, wow, this is really bad, right? So, like, if Foxconn was to fail, their goals are economy. You know, that's going to be a big blow. I wouldn't say it would kill Racine, but it would, like, literally, it would maybe cripple it to some degree, and that's scary. That one employer can, you know, look what happened in Kenosha with the Chrysler factory, the Chrysler plant. You know, when they left, just it destroyed Kenosha for a while, right? And it's still people are still recovering from Chrysler leaving. So that's the one thing that worries me a lot. Is like, what happens if Foxconn fails?
Yeah, we just kind of saw that with the GM plant in Janesville, the same kind of phenomena. I mean, failing is just, like, not even the long-term catastrophic failure. Like, what if, you know, Wisconsin pays out all of that money and we don't get anything for it except an empty concrete lot?
Right. They've done it before in the past, too. But
yeah, they did this to Brazil. They promised that they would create, like, tens of thousands of jobs in a giant manufacturing facility, and now they only, like, employ hundreds of people, maybe, at a facility a fraction of the original size.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, to me, I'm still personally against it. I would never have voted for it. But when I knock on doors, my constituents are, like, torn. My constituents are torn, and, you know, some of them are very for it. So it's just, it's tough because I told them where I stand on the issue. But at this point, like, I have to make, I guess, I got hand, and I have to make the best out of this hand. And my goal now is to essentially get as many people from the city of Racine to be hired, because also in this contract that we got from Foxconn, there's nothing in this contract that says anybody from Racine will be hired. So, you know, that's also scary that, you know, we're going to be paying for it. The state is going to be paying for it. And, you know, we're not guaranteed that Wisconsinites are going to get hired, specifically people from Racine.
Wait, so the job guarantees that they promised, did they even give a set number of employees that they're going to hire? Or is it all dependent on manufacturing facilities being done on a certain time? How is the incentive structured?
Right. So right now it's like a big, like, it's a big question mark. So there's just a lot of talks, a lot of articles are saying that the, you know, contract says this and the contract says that. But there's no real, I don't think I personally have not seen the actual contract yet, but from what I heard, there's no, like, solidification saying that people from Racine County will be hired, people from Milwaukee will be hired, or, you know, so yeah, it's a big question mark.
That seems like a terrible negotiating position.
Right.
It's like, and you gave away all of the milk and got nothing for it.
Right. It's a scary deal. I'm not sure. Like, I don't even know if it was a deal. I feel like it's just like what we got, and now here you go. Deal. It's like a deal wizard.
Well, it's like you only need like six people to agree to this, and unfortunately none of them like live in Racine, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul Ryan's probably visited Racine at some points, although I don't think he has an office out there.
He comes on Pancake Day.
Well, everybody comes Pancake Day.
He does.
Yeah, he puts on an apron and a hat, flips a pancake, and goes home.
So we might have some listeners who don't know Racine that well. And I think part of the reason you have so many people torn on this and so many people... Like, I have a lot of family members in Racine. I mean, granted, they're all Republicans and love to give money to big corporations. But I think so many people in Racine particularly... more so than the rest of Wisconsin, are so desperate to have something there, like, because it's had, I believe, correct, the highest unemployment, Racine, or has, second highest in right, Wisconsin for a
Racine
long time.
Racine has had the highest unemployment for decades for a city of this size.
Yeah. Like, I always heard the tales when I was a kid of it being this manufacturing... You know, especially for a city its size, like this giant, really, of manufacturing and industry. You know, there's big companies that were started there, like Case
and Johnson.
You know,
S.C. Johnson,
Johnson Wax,
right? S.C. Johnson, Incinerator, you know, Rude Lighting, the inventors of the LED light. Like, yeah, there's right,
Golden Books were from Racine.
So there's a lot of. You know, famous, like, entrepreneurs. Like, I think we're, like, entrepreneur, like, capital of America.
And, you know, I was always, like, I was always told the tales that, well, when they built the interstate, it was so far away from the city of Racine that it, you know, kind of took the benefit away from the companies being in the city. And then if they're going to move anyways, why even stay anywhere nearby? And, you know, I don't know the exact history if that's true, but whatever happened over 30 years or so, it just, everything left.
Right.
And I think people are willing to take a bad deal because they're blind. Right. They're just so hopeful.
Yeah. And that's the thing. As much as I want to be against Foxconn, which I am, but like people are just so hopeful. People are like they tell me like I'm so glad that Foxconn came here because we are struggling. You know, we haven't had jobs or so many people here have two jobs. They have, you know, what Republicans call stepping stone jobs. These stepping stone jobs are the jobs in Racine. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to say, I'm actually really impressed by your approach, which is I'm against it, but I have to represent my constituents, and if we're going to have it, it might as well benefit my city, my constituents.
Right, sometimes I have to make accommodations with reality.
Right.
Yeah, and it's not like the company can't be good. Like, or, I mean, I should say the business, it's, you know, in Racine. It's not like it can't be good for the area. It's just that we all kind of think it's unlikely to be.
Yeah. I think that it's going to definitely have some big issues that they have to overcome. But I'm not going to... I'm not trying to make it harder for them to succeed because, I do want them to succeed, right? I want them to protect the environment and there's talks that they are going to do whatever they can to make sure there's little damage to the environment. So, like, I'm not going to deny the fact that they have, you know, stated that they're going to, you know, they're going to attempt to try. How much we believe them, you know, I don't trust corporations with the environment personally. So, I just hope that. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping, like everybody else, I am very hopeful that we get a good, somewhat of a good deal out of this, you know, Foxconn deal.
I was going to say, I really hope so, too, because it sounds like with all this ambiguity surrounding the deal, this giant multinational corporation could end up flexing their, like, just legal retainer against the county of Racine to get whatever it wants whenever those, you know, kind of thorny questions come up.
Right. Yeah. And, yeah, like, definitely, I definitely hope that they respect us. When we, I mean, they've gotten a really sweet deal. I don't think nobody else in the history of Wisconsin has gotten a deal like that. So I would be very upset if we started saying like, yo, like, we need y'all to like get some solar panels because you're going to be producing you're going to be wasting a lot of coal on electricity, right? So I would think it'd be fair if you're getting all these tax breaks that you're going to get. You got expedited environmental provisions expedited, like
they got to write their own permit with the DNR, right?
I can't really speak on that.
Not exactly, but which it sounded pretty generous from the reporting.
Yeah. I believe they expedited the whole process. They wrote some rules to make it smoother and easier. It's no one, as far as I know, knows for sure yet if there were environmental things, you know, that they got exceptions for. No, but it seems like at least the process they got exceptions for.
Yeah, exactly. The process itself to get to go through the environmental loops or whatever, that's the only thing that they've got expedited. Mm-hmm. But the regulations and everything are still the same for them and everybody else. I personally have gone to the wastewater management director and Keith Haas in Racine. Yeah. And I talked to him and he said, yeah, like the only thing they gotten so far is just they have gotten their process expedited and that's about it. They still have to report to him. They still have to follow the regulations that are in place by this current administration's DNR and EPA.
So, where we are now, you seem fairly confident. You know, we should still all, you know, the county, state should still be vigilant, but seem fairly confident that the entities in Racine are aware of these concerns and are doing the best they can to make sure it doesn't totally F up the environment in Racine.
Right. I wouldn't say I'm totally confident.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm totally confident, but I have been doing my own research and my own homework to make sure that, you know, all my concerns and my constituents' concerns, a lot of my constituents were worried about the environment, so I am making sure that I know what's going on with our environment. So I still have to talk about the wetlands. I'm still figuring that out. But yeah, I need to gather as much information as possible. You know, it's just hard to talk to the DNR and EPA members sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm still reaching out to them for the wetlands part of it. But as far as the water and the waste management part of it, they are held to the same standards as our current corporations are in Racine County.
Are there wetlands on that property?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a park or is it private land that those were on?
They were privately owned.
Okay.
By multiple people that live around the area, farmers, residential, commercial, but yeah. They were all owned by private entities, but most of them have been sold from what I've seen in the reports.
Okay. So how about we get to the congressional election then, first district.
Oh,
yeah, we're gonna go to the Republican side. Oh. I won't make you say on the air which one of those guys you
support. Okay, thank you so much.
Okay, I don't want you. Yeah, don't worry about. We're not gonna push you on either one. But for I am curious, not living in Racine, and for those people not in Racine, because it is a public race in general, what is the feeling like, either in the primaries, you know, as a whole, like what are the issues being talked about, you know, in Racine about this?
For CD1, the CD1 race?
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously the world, you know, hell froze in Racine County the day that Paul Ryan said he was stepping down.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was a crazy day in Racine. I got multiple calls from multiple politicians. Everybody's freaking out. What the hell is going on? But yeah, that was a crazy day. But yeah, some people, and I'm one of them, think it's because Randy Bryce has been able to fundraise unbelievably. You know, he's one of the two Democrats that got lucky and actually went viral with their videos.
Yeah.
So yeah, his video went viral, and people have been fundraising. He's been fundraising like crazy. He's been doing a really good job.
That's in the Bernie model, though, right?
Right. Yeah, Bernie Sanders endorsed
Randy Bryce.
But yeah, it's – I personally know both of the candidates, mm-hmm. and I like both of them.
Yeah.
So it sucks because it's like picking between your mom and dad type thing for me.
Is that – so, like, are you, like – and you don't have to, like, you know, get too detailed, but do you feel like a pressure to, like, is that a legitimate thing that you feel like a pressure, like people are pressuring you to pick one? Do they court you? Oh, how does that?
Oh yeah. All the time, dude.
Yeah. That's I can attest to this. I've this with my own eyes.
Yeah, oh, that's definitely. Great. I get that all the time. I mean, they're not, nobody's going to freaking go after
me. Yeah, I think once the primary is over, it's all going to be water under the bridge, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, it's been tough for Democrats, progressives, or whatever in CD1 for sure. Kenosha, Racine. I know Kenosha is more of a Cassie area. I know Racine is definitely Randy, but it's, you know,
it's an interesting divide.
Yeah, it's a very interesting divide. Obviously, they're pro Cassie and Randy throughout the CD, but yeah, it's in the political world, in the politicals, there's definitely a lot of pressure. I'm sure the average person, there's nothing, they don't feel any of this pressure. Among the elected officials, I know there's a lot of
interesting
pressure. Yeah.
So I mean, you would just I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems like it's like a good problem to have. Like, this is what we want, right? We want competitive races with lots of good candidates.
Correct. Correct. Definitely. And I might be wrong on this, but I think Cassie Myers actually raised more money. If we were to take Randy Bryce out of this equation, I believe Cassie Myers has raised more money than any other Democrat has in that CD. So, like, both of these candidates are freaking awesome.
Yeah, well, Jeff Thomas was a Trojan horse before, so.
That's, ooh, okay.
The previous perennial candidate in CD1, Dr. Jeff Thomas, he was kind of a strawman candidate.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's a very interesting race for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, Charles, you wanted to ask if you...
Brian Style, I think, is the clear front runner on the right now, right?
You said Randy?
No, Brian Stell. We're talking about the conservatives.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I have not been following too much I have not been focusing too much on the CD race, obviously, because, like, I'm swamped with work.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with the Republicans, I have no idea, to be honest with you, who's, like, leading that race, who's the front runner. So I'm going to be honest. Yeah, I don't know who the front runner is for the Republican side.
Well, you got the Paul Ryan's driver, I think, is the anointed candidate, right?
Right. I did hear that.
Then there's the former Green Beret, whose webpage we read on the pod one day. He's Nick. He seemed kind of crazy.
Isn't there like – I know there's like a – from what I heard is that the Republicans want to endorse a candidate because he's like basically a neo-Nazi.
Oh, yeah, right, Mark Nalen. Yeah.
He's the guy who got Paul Nalen.
Paul Nalen, sorry.
Yeah, he was banned from, or was he banned from Twitter, or just taken, his blue check mark was taken away or something?
And I think he was banned. I think, like, he was, like, the second person banned from Twitter.
Well, you know what? Let me take that back. Maybe he's not neo-Nazi, but just, like, alt-right? Is that what he is?
Yeah, he went on, like, one of those white supremacist podcasts, and, like, even Steve Bannon disavowed him.
Yeah, Breitbart cut him loose. He was kind of, like, a Breitbart favorite, and then he started becoming, like, or probably always was, but he said all these anti-Semitic things, and even Breitbart was like, no, no, no.
So you know you're doing something wrong, or right, I guess, no pun intended. If you're if you're getting disavowed by fucking Steve Bannon,
yeah, no, it's kind of like a which is only playing into Myers and Bryce's hand, is like the right seems like a shit show. I mean, maybe this Brian Stile, who's a little newer.
The manufacturer, the lawyer who says he was a manufacturer because he was in the plant, I guess. That makes him a manufacturer, right?
Yeah, he might in the end, by the time the general comes around, give him a run for their money. It's hard to say.
Right.
How's the... understanding that you're busy lately, but how's the gubernatorial feeling in Racine? Is there anyone who's been, like, campaigning there a lot recently? Anyone, you don't have to, like, obviously.
Has Tony Evers made his rounds?
What did you ask, Charles?
Tony Evers. He made his rounds through Beloit with the, couple stops.
Honestly, there's been a few candidates here and there. I know Andy Gronick has come through. Mike McCabe has come through, but I don't think Kelda Royce has been really active, very vocal on the Foxconn thing here in Racine County. But other than them three, I can't think of many candidates that have actually, like, just been down in Racine.
Seems like a big population that you want to target.
It's only the fourth or fifth biggest city in the state. Why spend time there?
There's so many emblematic issues.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Yeah, that we don't see a lot of candidates come our way.
I guess the big donors in Racine County probably don't donate to Democrat causes. If I had to bet.
Right, but I mean, you would think because we have a large city, they would come to that, at least the city part of it. But not really. I don't really see too. I personally don't see too many candidates coming down here. Like I said, I know Kelda's been down here. Annie Gronick, Mike McCabe.
Yeah, and here in Beloit, I think we've only seen one. I guess, Pete, you're kind of spoiled being up in Madison. You can see, a few of them almost nearly constantly.
Yeah, there's too many. I don't.
There's 12 candidates still?
I thought, did some drop out?
Oh, there were like 17, right?
There's like 15. There's like 15. 17. Yeah, I don't even know how many. What's the official number of candidates that were actually in the race? But there was a good amount. I know Bob Harlow dropped out. Michelle Doolin, Jeff Rumba.
You know all these names. Yeah, there's been a couple. Impressive. Yeah, in Racine, in Madison, we're under a media blackout since our mayor's running for it. So,
Soggy.
He's cutting off all of the, we aren't, it's like the East German Stasi here. We don't get any information about the other governor candidates.
They don't bother to show their face in Madison.
No. Yeah, he's just trying to win Madison by like 97% and then hope that takes the state.
Right. Yeah, I've had a couple conversations with Paul Soglin. He seems like a pretty cool guy.
He is an interesting career path. I heard a
meme from Charles.
You heard what from Charles?
I heard a from Charles.
Yeah.
I got my questions about how he's managing Madison, but that's neither here nor there.
It's you know, the thing about the thing about Soglin, though, that I'll say is that. And this has nothing to do with his history as a politician, but he literally said he's not going to campaign. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to go around the state campaigning. Yeah, I don't even know if that's true, but yeah, he said that in an article like 2-3 weeks ago. Like, they were talking about some other candidates, you know, revving up the campaigning. Like, some one candidate was going on like a supper club tour or something like that. And Sutherland's like, nah, I'm good. I'm going to stay home. It's like a 19th century presidential election. He's like, no, I'll just do it from my front porch.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Here's a fun fact, guys. A lot of politicians do not like to campaign. So, well,
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't really push as hard. A lot of politicians don't push as hard as I personally, you know, I don't know. I that's why I really encourage people to run for office, because, you know, I see how some politicians run, and a lot of politicians take it for granted, and they just don't realize that people don't realize that if you don't know how much power you have until you actually run for office.
Mm-hmm.
So another plug, run for office.
I mean, so in the wake of like the 2016 presidential election, there was this big momentum and this cause, you know, this movement across the country, you know, where people were echoing that, you know, run for office, do it, you know, do local, do Congress, do this, do that, you know, just run for office. And there has been he left.
No, even like, wasn't it during, he was like, get a clipboard, get some signatures, run for office, right? Wasn't that 2015?
Memory serves? But no one listened until we got into the bad time stream. But yeah, anyways, after the election, like, it was this big thing. I mean, were you inspired by that in any way? Just how that election went and how, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I am definitely one of the Bernie or bust people. I was sick and tired of Democrats falling short of progressive heroes. And I know a lot of the establishment probably won't agree with me on that statement, but like, here's a perfect example. Why I ran as Green Party, why I'm OWR, why I'm WFP. So in my city, in the city of Racine, run by Democrats, majority progressive people, whatever you want to call them, just like Madison, Milwaukee, but yet, we still have like highest incarceration in the nation. In Racine, we have a big incarceration problem, you know, run by progressives, run by Democrats, Democratic mayor. There is no reason why I had to quit my job in 2017 to go around the whole entire city of Racine collecting signatures to decriminalize cannabis. It wasn't the Republicans that were fighting me. It was the Dems. It was Democratic-leaning people. If they weren't Democrats, were left-leaning, right? It was them who were putting the resistance towards decriminalization. It's even till this day, even though we were short a few signatures, you would think they would pass decriminalization at the city level.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't picked up the baton where we left off. Right. And it's just mind blowing to me that, you know, this is why it's hard for people to believe in the Democratic message, because they don't always follow through. I'm not saying they never follow through, but it's just hard to get these people to react. You know, I went to common council meetings multiple times and I spoke. We collected more signatures in 2 months than people voted in the 2016 and 2017 election for the aldermatic races combined. So you would think after me repeating this message over and over again at the common council, one of them would be like, you know what? Maybe we should pass decriminalization. literally no resistance in the common council. That's for the left-leaning Democrats or centrists. Because even the Republicans have said they would support this bill.
Of course, because obviously, even from a business perspective, like, it would just help the county's balance sheet. They would have to spend less on incarceration and law enforcement and lawyers to process all of these people. And it would, just boggles my mind. Because after you point out a problem and you point out how many people also notice the problem and they still don't do anything, then their excuses are incredibly thin.
Right. And again, this is the city of Racine, Democratic run city for the most part. And it's just, like I said, very, very upsetting that I have to, you know, that we had to go through that ordeal. And still, that the fact that they haven't picked up on it, it's very disappointing.
Here's some, seems like a strange and random, perhaps nerdish question, but how many incumbents are on the Racine City Council? Like, and how long have they been there?
Incumbents? So actually, this past election was a really shake-up year. It was the odd number, the even numbers that were up, and let me see, two was an incumbent, four was an incumbent that won, six was an incumbent that won, eight was an incumbent that won, 10 was a newcomer. The incumbent got beat after serving on a common council for like 20 years, and the rest were not challenged.
That's interesting. So, yeah. Not very much. They don't have a reason to change their position, you know.
Right, and here's the fun fact: older? Is that, oh yeah, a lot of them were older. Yeah. One of the incumbents was a big Democrat union president person, and he got beat by a, you know, I wouldn't call her a Republican, but definitely like not a hardcore progressive,
like a centrist Democrat,
like a centrist. Leaning right, I would say. Centrist. I would say centrist. But, you know, he got beat by her. And, like, I don't get it. Like, I don't get why the Dems are – I mean, I get it, like, because they're not doing – their they're not being progressives. But, like, I don't get why they're not being progressives. Like, they could literally let loose in Racine and it'd be okay.
Right. Well, let's go with the $15 minimum wage. Let's – not necessarily legalized, but decriminalized to the extent possible, right?
Right.
This is... I'm just... Have you asked anyone like that? That question?
As who?
Like these... The Democrats who, you know, are kind of...
resistant to the idea.
Yeah, like...
Have I lobbied them, are you saying?
No, just have you asked them, like, hey, why aren't you more progressive? Or even just specific issues? Oh, like, why don't, like, because I'm just, like, curious, because it's a really, actually, perfectly legitimate question that I wouldn't even have guessed to. Like, why? Really? Like, honestly, why aren't you more progressive?
Right. Yes, I've talked to most of them on a one-on-one basis. They all gave me different answers, but pretty much all of them. Even the ones that said, even the ones that have agreed to it, you know, some of them, you know, there's a specific alderman that agreed to it, said that he would do it. He said he's working on it, but I haven't seen anything happen yet. Hmm. So, until it happens, then I'm gonna be like, oh, okay,
yeah.
But I still haven't seen anything yet. So, I am going to do. So I guess I could do like an exclusive here. On the 25th of this month, I will be meeting with some county people, some county lawyers, and see if I could start to see what I can do potentially in the county level to decriminalize cannabis.
Wow.
Or at least get the sheriffs to stop hassling people over it.
Right. So I am going to do whatever I can to pass decriminalization at a county level because – I'm not taking my seat for granted. Yeah. And I'm going to do whatever I can to make Racine County as progressive as possible. There is no reason why I'm going. And here's the thing. I'm in the county where the majority of them are. There's 21 seats. And I would say three are solid progressives.
Yeah.
So if I can propose it in a conservative majority, there's no reason why Racine or Kenosha or Beloit, or all these other progressive cities, Milwaukee. What the hell are y'all waiting for? What are you waiting for? Like, yes, we're against a Republican majority in the state, but what is stopping you at a city level?
Well, on one level, on a theoretical level, like the exercise of police authority is one of the few authorities that municipal officials can have, and like having an effect on crime is like one of the only measurements that they can, you know, point to as a success or a failure. And to stop that war on crime, they would have to stop so many interests and other problems.
Mm. Wouldn't that be, in the end, a reason to decriminalize it? Like,
right.
Oh, absolutely.
My thing now is, like, if you're an elected official and you still don't know about decriminalization and you are getting the Democratic endorsement and or progressive endorsements and you're not for decriminalization, like, you need to move out the way.
Yeah, it should be one of those litmus test issues.
Right.
That's on a national level. There was that congressman from Oregon. He's like this really old guy. But mm-hmm. on April 20th of this year, he released that video. And he sort of, without saying it explicitly, he kind of proposed it as a wedge issue for Democrats, for the left. Right. Particularly because, again, on the national level, well, shit, even in Wisconsin, on the state level, like, the Republican leadership is
split on it.
Well, no. Like, Walker just doubled down, like, a week ago saying it's a gateway drug.
Yeah, but didn't Voss or somebody in the legislature leadership kind of endorse the idea? Yeah, at any rate.
I know Van Wangard. It might have been Van Wangard who said that. He's very anti. I mean, they're all anti, you know. I don't want to call it a drug, but they're anti-cannabis.
Yeah. I mean, Dane County decriminalized it a while back, didn't we?
Right. And hats off to Dane County.
Are you going to be speaking with anyone from... I mean, there might be someone here that might have some specific knowledge for you?
I've talked to cannabis activists who were part of that movement.
Oh, okay, cool. Great.
Yeah, and shout out to Gary Stork and other elected officials from there. Again, it comes down to our elected officials. It's a city thing. The counties might be a little bit more held back because of all the conservatives on the board, but again, there's no reason why the city of Racine, the city of Milwaukee, Beloit, Kenosha, all these other big cities, Eau Claire, no reason why they can't decriminalize.
Or even the state, if Melissa Sargent gets her way.
Well, yeah, well, the state might be a little bit tougher because you have to, right now it's the majority Republican. But, on the city level, there's no reason why we can't reduce the fines to $0. Zero, no fines.
Yeah.
You know, we need to start fighting back. And this is why the people don't believe in the Democratic Party. It's because they say they're fighting for us, but sometimes I'm like, don't get me wrong, they do fight for us. But I just wish they would just, like, you know, puff up their chest a little bit and say, like, yeah, we're swinging back.
Right? Demand something.
Yeah. Right.
Go ahead, Charles.
I was going to say, this might actually be one of those issues where there could be, like, genuine bipartisan compromise. You can reach across the aisle. I mean, Alaska and Maine legalized, and they're certainly not progressive bastions.
Right. And see, honestly, guys, what I'm afraid of is that the Republicans take this win.
I agree with you. Agree with you that they might all of a sudden go 180 in the next, like, 2 years.
Boehner. Remember John Boehner?
Yeah.
He's an anti-dealer.
Cracked down on, you know, drug hardcore on drug policies. He came out not too long ago. Oh yeah, by the way, I'm a marijuana lobbyist now.
Yep.
Marijuana's great.
Former Speaker of the House.
Right. The fucking head, the freaking head of the GOP camp. Like, the last thing we need is for the Dems to again fumble the ball.
Right. Can you detest why are they so terrible at negotiating or otherwise getting things out of this Congress when they have almost all of the cards?
Yeah. It is mind blowing to me. Why but again, like the thing is, like I don't. People always say like I'm just here to bash the Dems. I'm not here to just bash the Dems. I just want them to realize like, yo, wake up. Wake up. Yeah, we would support you if you just would just like puff up a little bit. Start swinging back at Republicans.
Right. Try to ask for things for everybody else. It's ridiculous.
Right. And you know, one thing I get is like it's like you got to be more pragmatic, Fabi. I'm like, why do I have to be pragmatic with, you know, Republicans who, and I'm talking about not the voters, but the elected officials who are out here saying stuff like, you know, they don't know if climate change is real or not, or it's a hoax. Like, yo, why am I being pragmatic with somebody who doesn't believe in basic science? Like, dude, come on now. Like,
yeah. You don't compromise with crazy.
Right. Like, you know, it's a shame that they're able to just spew their lies so much to the average person. And like people who truly believe in, you know, conservatism, like to a degree, everybody, you know, I hate when they're like, when they use their, I'm fiscally conservative. Like, yo, we're all fiscally conservative.
Everybody has to balance their checkbook.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I don't grab a check. You know, I don't get my check every, you know, when I get paid and be like, I am not fiscally conservative and I'm gonna throw this money away at in the garbage. Like, come on now. Like, I hate when they say that. I'm fiscally conservative. Like, no, I'm fiscally conservative. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Like,
no, I have bank overdrafts. Sorry.
Right. Like, that just, I don't, it's just, I hate that cop out so much.
Yeah. Especially when it then becomes like this blurry ground between like people who are just like you're saying, just like reasonable about money, and then the people who are like, yeah, no, but I'm using the tax code to be racist. And then like these two groups start conflating because they both use the stupid term fiscally conservative.
Right. Yeah. So, another other thing too is like,
oh, go ahead.
Democrats need to learn how to label their terminology a little bit better.
Yeah, we need to be better on branding.
Like, hey man, as someone who is in comedy, sir, should be great at that.
Yeah, right.
Like I think that's a like just that could be like, that's a great tool.
Yeah. It is a great tool.
Like the language, you know.
We need to start, yeah, we need to start, you know, when the Dems were apologizing for giving people health care, we know it's not the best deal. No, we gave you health care, period. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Own it. Why are you saying it's not the best deal? No, we got to convince the people it was the best deal. Like, it's not what we wanted, but let's celebrate the win.
Mm. Well, yeah, sorry, right? It wasn't perfect. I'll do better next time.
Well, to do better then.
Yeah, so, I mean, we kind of should wrap up. Was there anything else that, local issues that we didn't touch on that are important to you? Is there something coming up that you want to talk about with anything you're involved in? Or?
Yeah, like I said, like, for me personally, the cannabis one is a big one that I'm still trying to accomplish. Mm-hmm. The Racine Gubernatorial Forum in the Bryan Center, May 30th, 6 p.m. Anybody who's listening to this should come just hear what the candidates have to say. But yeah, that's pretty much it that I can think of. Mm-hmm. On a
Are you streaming that online, by the way?
Yeah, I think we are. Yep, okay. We are.
Cool.
Yep. So if you can't come, just go online, Wisconsin's Choice, and you can watch online.
To Wisconsin Choice Campaign.
Yep, it's on Facebook, and or you could go to wichoose.org. You'll find it there, too. Yep.
That's awesome. And I think I saw online there's going to be three of these around the state.
There's going to be a few more, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to get one in Dane County, and the other two are still pending.
Okay. Cool. Yep. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been cool. You're our first elected official on the show.
This no problem. Anytime, guys.
Great. Yeah. No, we'd love to have you back again. Especially, I think, as the elections heat up. Yeah, in the fall.
Right. Yeah, I'd definitely come back on the fall. That'd be cool.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. All right, and we're back with some closing thoughts. I just want to say thank you again to Fabi. That was a fun interview. Hope everyone enjoyed it. And speaking of Wisconsin politics, there was an interesting article in the New Yorker. When exactly did this come out? This morning, 5 a.m. Dude's up early. By Benjamin Wallace Wells, called "Will the Tea Party Era End Where It Started in Wisconsin?" Which I didn't know it started here, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Walker was certainly the most effective.
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember, like, Hannity and Glenn Beck coming to Wisconsin, but maybe they did. You know, for those Tea Party rallies. So, in the article, the thesis is that a certain form of politics, which I will sum up here from... They quote Kenneth Meyer, a political scientist at the University of Wisconsin. "What Wisconsin gave the nation was the model where you could take a very tiny electoral margin and act as if you had won an overwhelming victory, and the other side had to say no." And to just expand on that, they're talking about Republicans who then destroy the institutions and infrastructure.
Well, no, the other side had no say, right? Isn't that what it says? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't I say that? Didn't I finish the quote? "Act as if you had an overwhelming victory and the other side had no say at all." And then just that the fact what the Republicans in this state did with that model, I think, is another important part of the article. Like, they reference potholes in Wisconsin. They quote Tony Evers, who is the what's his job? The education something or another? Secretary of Education for the state, I think. And he's quoting the article saying they're calling potholes Scott holes in Wisconsin, and it also references not enough gravel for gravel roads in some of the rural parts, or how they're taking pavement off some roads because they can't afford the upkeep. And anyway, I'd recommend the article for anyone around the country to get an understanding, because I think we've talked about this in the podcast. I mean, Wisconsin is a little bit of a microcosm for the rest of the country. You know, Scott Walker's is the nicest thing I've ever said about him. He's not as bad as Donald Trump, but you know, he governs in a similar fashion, just with fewer porn stars.
It's a matter of degree.
Yeah.
Scott Walker's nowhere near that interesting.
Yeah.
He eats his ham sandwich for lunch every day. Just look at his Instagram.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah. No, he. Like, tweets or like posts a picture of his ham sandwich that he eats every day for lunch.
Anyway, they quote Dale Schultz, who was the former leader in the state Senate, Republican. He's since become a critic of the Walker administration. He was prominent in a Rolling Stone article about the gerrymandering here. Because he's been vocal about how terrible it was, although I believe he voted for it at the time, but he regrets that. If he did vote against it, he was the only Republican. I'd have to go check that. Either way, he now is very against this form of politics. And, you know, he has some good quotes in this article. He said, "The Walker administration created a malaise that hangs in the state to this day." Which is true. I feel it.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
That's why the cats are so lazy.
Cats in the state used to get so much done before Scott Walker. He talks about elections in Wisconsin being over in June, because of the way the campaign finance laws are here, and, there's so much negative campaigning, negative advertising. They, well, this is my favorite quote. I'll just read this first from Dale Schultz. "What you have is a bunch of," talking about the Republicans and conservatives now in the state, "what you have is a bunch of nationalist, know-nothing anarchists."
Wow, way to embed that Nazi reference.
Yeah, great, concise criticism. It was interesting in the article they talked to... what is the guy's or the lady's name? Patty Schachner from who recently won a state Senate upset in earlier
Northwest Wisconsin.
It was earlier this year or late last year?
Just after the Trump victory, at any rate. It was the first election after the Trump victory here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. It wasn't just after though. It wasn't like last spring or anything.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a special election there. And anyway, she talks in the article, it's noteworthy, about the negative advertising and the outside money coming in. They like, you know, she's worked as a county, what do they call it, coroner? Medical examiner. And they tried to, I'm trying to find the quote now. But they tried to, like, portray her time in that position, like, really poorly. And they, like, sent out this mailer with, like...
And shoved her face on some nails or something?
Quote, "They put my head on a voluptuous body in a low-cut white shirt with the button being pulled up." Shatner said, quote, "I'm 58, unquote.
I don't know who you are, sir, but this is Wisconsin.
Well, and she said it was kind of dumb, you know, she didn't use those words, but because people know her there.
Yeah, she's a community figure.
And it's just, like, not, you know, like, in a small rural area, if you've held positions there, it's kind of hard to, like, make shit, well, it's easy, I guess, to do it, but luckily they weren't successful and making up shit about her. And and I think you'll find this, I think this is in your model of politics a little bit, is that she did not talk about Trump, and she actually didn't even talk about Walker, but she talked about the opioid crisis, child care, health care, you know.
Yeah, right, some good solid policy planks.
Yeah, yeah, she said, and that's what she chalks up her win to.
I mean, especially up there where addiction is, like, riveting Hulk or, you know, just tearing apart at the community fabric.
Yeah, yeah. It's really sad. What else? Did you want to say something about Beloit?
Beloit? No, we should save that for a deep dive next week. We can rant about that for a long time.
So, it's officially a preview, folks. Anything else going on in the state? I feel like there was.
See, we already talked about sports, and that's the bread and butter, right?
That's what keeps us from having civil war in the state. It's hard to fight people with Packer hats on.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a good weekend to get any gardening done that you need to. We're going to have a few solid days of sunshine to get work done.
You know, something this isn't really about the state, I'm just going to say it anyway, that I found out yesterday is that Ta-Nehisi, which I'm probably mispronouncing, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a prominent African-American writer, he has been writing Black Panther for a couple of years, and he announced that he is going to be doing Captain America, which I think is just super awesome.
Hell yeah.
And he wrote in The Atlantic... you know, he's a good writer. How it's not about him putting his thoughts in Captain America's head, but Captain America putting his thoughts in. I'm butchering this quote, in his head, meaning it's not about him just like using it as a mouthpiece for his own ideas and politics and whatever.
Well, it's the mark of a good writer, right? A lot of the good writers tell you that their characters end up speaking through them.
Yeah, and for him to, like, he kind of talks about, like, looking at, like, a Lincoln-esque view of America and, like, how can that fit in with what he thinks or how can it shape what he thinks or, you know, which I just can't wait to see how that plays out. And he has some, like, great artists associated with the project as well. Quick Supreme Court case with Epic.
Embarrassing Wisconsin all over again.
Yep. Epic out of Verona, which is just south of Madison, for those who don't know. It's a major health digital archiving, record-keeping company.
They do a lot of things.
You know, in some ways, I would say they're up.
So there are certainly a healthcare technology company.
Good thing. That was tough to get out. Yeah, they have their issues. They're a little cultish, you know, inside info right there, people. But...
And they have a turnover problem.
Well, that's because they work them... They work them fucking hard. Yeah, if you can stay there 10 years, man, it actually supposedly does get better, but it's hard to get to 10 years. Anyway, they won a Supreme Court case, which is getting a lot of national buzz for limiting workers' ability to sue their employers if they had signed agreements before their employment. Which, of course, encourages, I would think, employers to do more of those agreements, right?
Right. Not necessarily good for the employee, though.
No, of course. Yeah, definitely not.
Like, it forces them into arbitration for any disputes arising from that agreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, if you've got an asshole boss who shorts your paycheck, make sure you... Yeah.
And then lastly, in terms of it being labor in major Wisconsin companies, what was it, Menards is having an issue with the National Labor Relations Board?
They sued the National Labor Relations Board because, I mean, we'll have to rely on our legal advisor for more nuanced perspective on this, but it seems like they wanted to say that that guy was an independent contractor and not an employee, so, yeah. Which makes it a different relationship than, you know, your typical employee-employer relationship.
I believe I said to you last night, man, what's with all of these labor issues, you know, popping off in Wisconsin lately? And you said, essentially 8 years of Scott Walker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of lays the groundwork, even if it's not a specific, like, legal thing, you know, because, for example, the Epic thing, or actually both of these cases, would be involving federal law.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I think it's a good example of culture.
The culture of politics. Scott Walker made his first stance, like, butchering the protections that state workers had, and then it's just been a steady march on since, and now it's inevitable that it would seep into the private, you know, business culture, and now we're seeing the legal ramifications of that all the way up to Supreme Court.
Yeah, and obviously it's not, in terms of it being a national issue, Wisconsin and Walker was on the forefront of this, but I mean, it wasn't just them. This has been...
Man, we're still talking about the Tea Party.
This has been... This has been a widespread... Well, it even goes beyond the... Well, it kind of even just goes beyond the Tea Party. I mean, this has been something that people like... Well, I don't know, like Grover Norquist, Koch Brothers, you know, whether they're activists or they're funders.
Sure, that reminds me. I'm going to probably have a grown-up book report about Jane Meyer's Dark Money for next week about all that.
Oh, sweet. I've been reading that one for a while. Yeah, can't wait for that.
Fascinating. Diane Hendricks is, of course, mentioned in the foreword. She's apparently, last year, was worth like $3.8 billion. That's going to be part of my blog rant for next week, so we'll save it.
Something to look forward to. All right, this has been Closing Thoughts. Tell me what to think. Thank you again to Fabi. You can find us on Twitter at Bloated Nemesis, and find you on Twitter at Green_Weird.
Fabi, I think, prefers Facebook communication, so you can find his Fabi for Racine Facebook page.
He's on Twitter, and I did see him on the Twitter. If it can just make my phone work faster, I will tell you his Twitter. It's Fabi for Racine. Yeah, should have realized that. All right, so yeah, hit him up, hit us all up, and thanks for listening. Later, Charles.
Days of sunny, days of
rain.
Destroy the myth that will break our chains.
break your chains.